Welcome to Season 2 of the Digitalization and Diversity Podcast, a show that tells personal stories and digital journeys of diverse people. My name is Adya and I am your host. Hi everyone, welcome to the last episode on Season 2 of the Digitalization and Diversity Podcast. The best is usually in the end. So today we are going to be talking about a topic which has been on my mind for some time, and I have been finding the right person to have a chat about this topic. So the theme of today's episode is FemTech and opening the dialogue on female health at work. Through several years of experience working and interacting with women in professional and personal settings, I have seen that women have learned and been conditioned to silently navigate female health issues. Many times, women also have a tendency to push through whatever is making them uncomfortable to make others comfortable. Some examples include a pregnancy loss such as a miscarriage or an abortion, a difficult menstruation cycle, a fertility treatment, going through breast cancer or cervical cancer treatment, someone going through hormonal therapy, dealing with menopause, recovering from a gynecological surgery or a chronic issue related to female health. And I am so happy to share that today I have the opportunity to discuss on this topic with my guest, Nandini, who is currently working at the convergence of healthcare and technology. Nandini is an avid advocate for harnessing the power of technology to further research in female health. She founded FemSee, a femtech company that offers personalized database solutions for better menstrual health. FemSee was acquired in 2021 by EveWorld, a Feb3-based social community platform exclusively for women. And in her previous avatars, Nandini was a marketing and strategy expert with over 10 years of experience at global technology giants and high-growth consumer startups. Welcome, Nandini. It is such a pleasure to have you on my podcast for the Season 2 finale. I've already made an introduction to what I must say is a very impressive bio. Is there anything else which you would like to add or share about yourself with the audience?
Hey, Adya. First of all, thanks so much for having me. And yeah, no pressure, really, right? So let me tell you, I don't know what else I can add, but let me tell you, if it's not already come out, for starters, I think I would call myself a very curious person. So I love learning. If you look at my YouTube, for example, it's full of DIY videos. My phone tabs are full of research papers. Genuinely, science fascinates me, especially the human body. I think the next revolution that's already here is biotech, especially femtech. Excited for the potential and everything that we will accomplish in the next decade or so. So that's it about.
Yeah, and I think you already opened the point on being curious and being able to see where technology can help. So to shed some light and set the scene on where we are today and why we decided to collaborate on this topic, could you share some statistics when it comes to women's healthcare and women-specific health issues?
Okay, there are so many numbers that come to mind. Let me give you a few of them, and then I'll tell you a story. So whatever interests you, that's the one that we'll go with. So 9, that's the official number of days of productivity that menstruators lose because of, you know, their symptoms. How many menstruators? 50 to 70% of all menstruators suffer from these issues and lose these days of productivity. So that's a very significant portion of the workforce. Now, we talk about the workforce and we talk about traditional office culture. Would you be curious if I told you that traditional office culture and all the productivity hacks that we actually read are mainly optimized for males? So let's talk about the male hormone cycle and the female hormone cycle. So the male hormone cycle is a daily cycle. Testosterone peaks in the morning and it ebbs later in the afternoon, and it is at its lowest in the evening. So when you have a productivity hack that says, wake up, rise early, go and tackle the hardest tasks first, meetings are generally better in the second half of the day, all of those are actually geared toward this testosterone cycle. So when your testosterone is slightly lower, you are a little more collaborative. Whereas in the morning, when your testosterone is high, you are ready to take risks and you're ready to tackle harder tasks. Whereas the female cycle is not like that. We don't operate on a daily cycle. So we have more of a monthly rhythm. So when you look at more progressive workplaces that we have today, which say flexible timings, come in early whenever you want, set your own goals, those things are actually practices that are more accommodative of the female menstrual cycle, where your creativity actually is high in the first half of your cycle, the first 2 weeks after your period, whereas your productivity is super high in the next 2 weeks. So those are the differences. So it's really encouraging to see office cultures change, but still traditional office culture is geared toward the male hormone cycle.
I'm really happy that you brought the language to address these terms, because I know that you're working at the core of femtech. And femtech as a term, as far as I know it, is relatively new. And I feel that it's coined less than a decade ago, because this sector has grown to encompass a whole suite of tech-enabled solutions. And, you know, we're on the digitalization and diversity podcast, so I'm always looking at how these two topics converge. So from your perspective, how can digitalization and technology be better leveraged in healthcare, especially for women?
Okay, I have another story here. So have you heard of the thalidomide drug, which came out, I think, in the 70s? So thalidomide came out and it was treated as an anti-nausea medication for pregnant women. Worked great. Everyone was very happy to not be pukey through their pregnancy, but it turned out that it caused birth defects. Now, this should have set a lot of alarm bells in organizations worldwide, saying drugs can act differently on women and especially on pregnant women. We need to do thorough testing. What they did instead was they said all women of menstruating age, all potentially fertile women, will be excluded from clinical testing, trials, and recruitments. Now, what happens is that now we already know that drugs act very differently on women, or basically females as opposed to males. So for the past, I think, 50 years now, shocking to hear that it's been 50 years since the 70s, menstruating people have been left out of these clinical trials, which means that a lot of data that's supposed to be there about how advancements in science and healthcare affect menstruating people is completely absent. One of the amazing initiatives that came out earlier, you know, in the previous decade, is a very simple app. It's the app called Clue, right, by Ida Tin, who actually founded the term femtech. That fills a very key gap. Basically, it collects data about menstruators, about their cycles, in a very data-efficient manner, and it uses that data to give them insights about their body. Now, imagine if this was connected with healthcare systems and all of the interventions that menstruating people have to take, from the BRCA1 gene marker to maybe getting the HPV vaccine. If this can be done in a safe and data secure manner, it would really change the backseat that women's health has taken all these years. That's where femtech, the potential for femtech is huge, I said earlier. That's where I think femtech will come in and address the gap in data usage and analytics toward female health.
So you mentioned the app Clue, right? And I have to say that I started to use the app in my mid-20s. And when I started, after a couple of months, I realized, why did I not know about this app before when I was a teenager? And why did I wait so long to track my health data from a female perspective? And you mentioned a couple of facts and figures and the gaps existing at the moment on femtech and related health data. And I would like to know, from your perspective, how can gaps in data usage and analytics in healthcare be addressed?
So you spoke about gaps, and I spoke about one gap, which is the lack of data. Now, there is also a downside to using such apps, which I think I should also call out, because not every app is the same. There has been some controversy, right, which has come out about certain other apps that I won't name, where your data is collected, and they do claim that the ads that are served to you on the free version are completely anonymized. But if you're not sure where your health data is going, and if you're not sure what you're signing over, that is a real concern. So security and anonymity of your health data, especially when you track it over an app, is something that, you know, is a real gap. So data security and respect for health data in a consumer technology setting, that is a real gap that I think a lot of focus needs to come on. All in good time.
I think one of the missions of FemTech is to address stigmatized areas. And I feel that I have come a long way and grown in terms of knowing the language around it and how to speak on those topics. But one of the thoughts I have is that it is 2022, where the topic of diversity and inclusion has received tremendous traction. But I still think it is difficult to address female health issues at work or in general in the broader sense, even as a part of mental health issues, even though these topics are increasingly getting destigmatized. And I want to have an open dialogue with you in terms of why is this the case today and how can employers support women's health better going forward?
This is where I start to say things that I shouldn't be saying. So for a very long time, women have come into the workplace, and you know how there is the popular advice that is given, leave the problems behind at home, bring yourself into the workplace. Somewhere along the way, it kind of got translated that leave your femininity at home as well. So when you're in the workplace, don't show the fact that you're a woman, try to be one of the guys, be aggressive, or your femininity was viewed as a weakness for a very long time. But that has rapidly been changing. I see so many workplaces today that actually have webinars and workshops around female health issues and how we can support females better. So that's one start, right? But this culture of sharing and bringing your femininity as a strength into the workplace is still something that's growing. And I think that's why it's difficult to fully speak out about health issues at work, because these are viewed as personal topics. As the topics come up in the workplace, as we have a workshop, as we have a webinar, as we have a circle, a conversation around these topics, it will all serve to destigmatize. And it's only inevitable, right? Like the 996 culture that some Chinese startups made popular is really catching on. Like, I can't count the number of friends and colleagues that I have that actually do a 996 on a regular basis. So if you're bringing so much of your time and energy and self into the workplace, let it be our whole selves. And it's great that workplaces are starting to facilitate this. But then again, I think only the privileged, very forward-thinking workplaces, if I may say, are doing this. There is still a vast majority of workplaces where this trend needs to trickle down into.
And I agree with you that it is a privilege. But at the same time, also, we cannot completely rely on employers to facilitate. It really needs to also come with that boldness and the courage. And unfortunately, that pressure does fall on women with regards to asking for more time off, asking for reprioritization of workloads, or even reintegration back into the organization after they have been out of work due to health issues, which are rather private, and somebody might not feel so comfortable sharing about it. And I feel that employees need to not shy away from bringing up issues that might impact their work. And employers then need to do their part at the very least by just listening and then thinking of ways to be more inclusive. And I know that in your work at FemTech, you have looked quite deeply into menstruation and menstrual leave policies and how that affects women. And I would like to know your thoughts on it. So for listeners who have not come across this kind of leave, menstrual leave is a type of leave where a person may have the option to take paid or unpaid leave from their employment if they are menstruating and are unable to go to work because of this. And I would like to get your perspective on this, Nandini. So do you think that menstrual leave policies are needed today?
I'll start by saying that I think it's refreshing. You know what you were saying earlier, where the onus is still on the woman to go and speak up about, say, taking time off for a menstrual health issue or workload reprioritization. Something like this, having a menstrual leave policy in the workplace, is a sign from your employer that says it's okay to say periods at work, right? It's okay to say uterus at work. And it's setting a space where your employee can come out and actually speak about the real issue. You can say sick leave and you can paint it all with the black plastic cover that they put the period pads in, or you can actually call it what it is and say it's menstrual leave. That is how I think it's refreshing. However, and there's always a however and a big but, right? It needs to come together with a change in workplace culture. So if your manager is the kind of person who's saying, oh, she takes a lot of menstrual leave, my male employee does not, let me promote him, then the very purpose of menstrual leave is failing. So it's refreshing as long as it's accompanied by a change in culture in the workplace.
So I think it is a lot governed by local laws today. And there are arguments against it, such as the risk of perpetuating gender stereotypes or downplaying the seriousness of other medical conditions. And there have been policies in the past which have tried to put menstrual leave policy as a prioritization at the local and the country levels as well. But I know that some companies do offer a menstrual leave on an annual basis. This is more common in Asia, but we do have a long way to go till it becomes a norm in other parts of the world. What I have seen, though, is that certain topics such as mental health have become an increasingly acceptable topic of conversation for the better. And some companies have now designated mental health officers, similar to first aid officers, and managers and leaders have almost a moral responsibility in addition to their business responsibilities to create an environment that supports their employees' well-being. Do you think that these formal roles are needed to ensure that we progress on addressing all these topics, which we're starting to open the dialogue on, the ones which you said that we still need to push through, we need to make sure that we get the courage to make it acceptable? Do you think that we need formal roles to make sure that we progress these topics?
Yeah, I'm all for it. I think it ties in very closely with what you said earlier, where things like policies like menstrual leave can get cascaded down from governments. So it's very easy to say governments will say companies do it. It's very abstract. Companies will say HR do it. Still very abstract, right? When you say there is an officer, a mental health point of contact or a menstrual health point of contact, it becomes one person's responsibility, or at least, and there is an onus to put out, say, for example, an annual report on what initiatives have been taken. KPIs get set for this role, a POC. And it becomes a very accountable way to action these items. So that person will champion these initiatives and pull together cross-functional leaders and resources within the company. And that's the only way, you know, something that's a governmental law actually gets cascaded down. And even culture change, for example, say, for example, helping a manager be more empathetic, who will the manager ask? This is one handy person to go ask, right? So I think it's a great way of actually implementing something from a law or a diversity initiative into something that's actually actionable.
Do you have some thoughts on like what kind of work policies and support systems are needed in professional environments today?
I've seen some great ones. I'll tell you the amazing ones that I came across. So there was this company that we did a workshop with when we were running FEMSI, who were doing an annual, they were doing an annual diversity initiative. So they were speaking about very diverse topics, from navigating sexuality to menstrual health and what everybody should know, even male employees should know about what their colleagues go through, about what their family members go through. It was set up in a very refreshing way where there was a lot of ability to ask questions anonymously. There was the ability to ask questions without revealing your name, a variety of Zoom only, I believe, where all of this was possible. And I think that digitalization, that technology initiative where people could ask their questions anonymously, that really opened up the floor to some very candid discussions. So I'd say have these candid discussions and use these anonymization tools to help your employees share what they really feel without making them feel put on the spot. Another thing, that very simple one, that a friend of mine, they run a Luna, which is a period care brand across Hong Kong, SAR and some other countries. So their company simply set up a hygiene product dispensers. It's a great support if you're anybody like me who constantly forgets their period care at home. So I think it's a very simple initiative which says that this restroom has been designed with some care for the female person. And lastly, I think this came out when I was working. I had a female boss who spoke out very loudly. So there was a girl who had taken the day off for menstrual cramps, and there was some ribbing about that. This was way back, like 2013, 14. And this female leader, loudly in a mixed gender room, said, period cramps can be as painful as a heart attack. Did you know that? You need leaders to champion initiatives like this, to break taboos like this. As a leader, to educate leaders to stand up or speak out about these issues would be another great initiative. I think these are the three that I've come across and experienced personally. There must be many more. I would love if there was a place where we could share these for leaders across industries to just look up and refer. Fingers crossed that digitalization will help that soon.
Definitely. And also having safe spaces to talk about this, whether that's in the form of a digital community or a closed environment, such as over a webinar, I think is super important. And we talked a lot about organizations and employers and the way they can collaborate with employees to create these inclusive spaces. How can a person as an individual, regardless of their gender, personally contribute to the advancement of femtech?
The answer starts with the very simple thing, right? Learn about the female body, learn about gaps in healthcare systems. A huge part of the problem in femtech, why femtech businesses don't scale, fail, or don't grow fast enough, is lack of awareness among their target audience. So if you know a fact, if you liked a number that you heard today on this podcast, spread the word and just break the stigma. I have two books that I'd love to recommend at this time, if you don't mind. Okay, so the first one is The Invisible Woman, which is basically, it's by Carolyn Criado Perez. The title is Invisible Women, Data Bias in a World Designed for Men. That was the book that inspired FEMSI, to be honest. It's quite an infuriating read if you're a female person, but I'd encourage people of all genders to read it just to understand, you know, how many gaps there do exist in systems all across the world. Another one that I'm reading right now is called Lies Our Mothers Told Us. You spoke very early on when we started about, you know, the burden of being a superwoman, of being present, you know, in every space at 100%. So this is a book by Nilanjana Bhaumik, and I will send both the links to you. So, you know, I think both of these are fascinating reads, one about the social expectations and the other about systems and data and the lack thereof. I think just learning about these topics, seeking out knowledge would be a great start. And if you just learn and spread the word and break the stigma, it will contribute to the advancement of femtech, simply because by hearing the stat or reading this book or coming across a femtech startup, a female person may find an answer to a pressing healthcare need that they may have, that they are too shy to talk about. So that's literally it.
Awesome. So I'm going to put both the book recommendations in the show notes. Anandini, it has been fantastic having you on the show today. As a closing question, is there a message that you would like to leave for the listeners?
Nothing aside from what I just said earlier. Learn. There's a lot out there that's happening in femtech. And the more you learn, the more exciting you'll feel. You'll think this whole space is.
That's great. So how can the listeners find you if they want to get in touch with you?
Okay, I'm currently going on a bit of a social media hiatus, but I am found a lot on Instagram. I post a lot about female health articles and topics on iamnandini, i.am.nandini. That's pretty much where you'll find anything I have to say on these topics that matter so much to me.
Great. Thanks, Nandini, for taking the time to be on the podcast today.
Thanks, Adya. Super fascinating discussion. Lovely speaking to you.
Thanks also to the listeners for listening in. As usual, I would love to hear your feedback on the episode. So please reach out to me on LinkedIn or Instagram or leave a review on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. This was also the last episode for season 2 of the DD Podcast. In time for a new start, a new year. I wish you all a great holiday break with relaxation, time with the people you value the most in your life, and also time for some self-reflection. I hope this podcast season motivated you to leverage digitalization to grow and create opportunities for yourself and contribute to a more open-minded and diverse society that all of us are a part of. Till next time.